Okay, we'll call to order the Wednesday, February 2nd, 2022, meeting for the Town of Curie Beach Historic Preservation Commission. The first item on the agenda is the adoption of the agenda.
I have a question.
Okay.
About the agenda. Is there some reason why we can't have Byron sworn in at the beginning of the meeting so that he can be a full participant?
We can.
All right.
I mean, if you just want to make a motion to move it.
Yes, I make that motion that we move Byron's swearing in to the first item on the first regular business on the agenda.
Second.
Okay. Do we need to make a motion for the mock quasi-judicial thing at the present time for the agenda? Or when we get to it, should we just table it?
Just table it when you get there. Sometime.
Okay. All right. If there's no other changes to the agenda, is there a motion to approve the agenda with the change suggested?
So moved.
I'll second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Next agenda item then is the oath of office for Brian. Byron. Sorry, I got it right.
I'm used to it.
So he will be now recorded as a vote for anything future, right? Okay, good. All right, next agenda item is the approval of the minutes. We actually have 2 minutes, so we should probably do them in order. The first one is the January 5th, 2022 special meeting of the HPC. Is there does anybody need to look at it, or do we want to?
I think we all looked at it ahead
okay.
of time, right?
Yep.
So I'll move to adopt the minutes from the special January 5th meeting.
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Next item is the regular meeting minutes from January 5th, 2022. Is there a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes for the January meeting.
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Public comments.
Where's Tony?
He's on the line. We have 2 people online.
Gary and Tony are on the line.
Yes. Oh, I should have mentioned that. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, Gary and Tony are here, but they are online. So, all right, public comments. I'm sorry. Do we have any public comments?
We do not.
No. Okay, nobody on it. Old business. This is the review of the draft HPC letter to the historic property owners. Everybody should have gotten my very first draft that I sent off maybe 2 weeks ago or so. We had a couple recommendations. I think Kathleen had some recommendations, edits, and I think both of them are in there. I don't have any problem with edits or changes at all. You know, I mean, I just put the first one out. So, Kathleen, you just want to kind of present your edits maybe? And somebody else had a couple.
I had some little minor
ones. Little minor ones, that's right. Okay.
Well, I just thought that the first paragraph, the congratulations belonged at the end of that paragraph. The second paragraph was kind of redundant. And it's nice not to have things too wordy because you don't want to lose interest of the people reading the letter. And instead of using the word please in 2 paragraphs in a row, that's why I said we invite you instead of please. Take some time. So Yeah, just simple. I just thought the letter would read better that way.
Any other comments?
Well, my only comment was towards the bottom where you say, or myself, chairperson of the HPC, and it's signed sincerely HPC. So we don't even know who myself is. I mean, we do.
No, but, that's right. Yeah. How do you want to send this out? Do you want to send it out just with the HPC, or do you want me to send it? Do you want us to send it out with my signature underneath it? I mean, we could do it either way.
What I would think, though, you know, not that I ever want to see you leave your post, but there may be a day when you're not the chairperson anymore.
Okay. Sure.
So just have it from the.
Is that a promise?
it's up to you. So I mean. I don't even know if it needs a signature, really, actually.
That probably doesn't need a signature, no. That's fine. So let's take out, let's see, if you have any questions, feel free to contact the town of Curie Beach, the Curie Beach Historic Preservation Commission, or the Federal Point Historic Preservation Society, and scratch out, or myself, chairperson of the HPC.
Mm-hmm. Jim has a question.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yeah.
It is.
Oh, yeah, okay, sorry.
Wow. I didn't catch that. Shame on me.
That's what's called selective vision. You could stare at it 10 times. Thank you, Jim.
Yes, sir.
So, again, with that correction, too. So, I'll make a motion to accept the revision offered by Kathleen with the change of striking myself, chairperson of the HPC, and the correction of presentation to preservation.
I'll second.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Excellent. Okay. And I guess the next part of that discussion is, okay, now that we've approved this, what do we do with it? We do have a list of addresses of World War II barracks located in Curie Beach, but we're also going to get a list of designated or targeted properties, I think, from the Federal Point Group, weren't we? I'm looking at you, Jim.
No, this was the only one that I was aware of, was the barracks.
The World War II barracks?
Were used as houses.
I thought when we, a couple months ago, we had a discussion that the Federal Point Historic Group said they were going to send us a list of other properties, too, not just the World War II, but ones that they would like to see.
Well, I know there are a few cottages on Atlantic. I don't know that the Federal Point person was talking about them. I know Ken Richardson had brought that up.
I can see if Federal Point even has an idea of places in town that they'd like to see play.
Okay, and...
The inventory that we appendix to the
designation report?
Right.
Yeah, I thought about that. I can't remember if the designation report had the properties for all of Curie Beach or just for the B1 district.
That's right. Just for the B1 district.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But it does have a list also, you know, within there with appropriate dates and so forth.
There is one additional thing that the Historic Society does. They have the properties researched.
Okay.
And the law firm on the island does it gratis.
Oh.
But I don't know if you drop 40-some.
They're planning on doing the research, huh?
Yeah. Because it means going downtown to check property records.
What is the desire of the commission then? We've got a letter. We can send it out. We can send it out to folks, the properties just on this list, with the idea that maybe next month, since we're going to meet next month now, that we can maybe identify other properties from our HPC designation report, which would have the dates for the B1 district.
And another thing we might do is revisit having the research done only to the properties that want to be plaqued.
I think that's the best, you know, is that we send out kind of a blanket to properties that are over 50 years old, because that's really the kind of the cut point is the 50 years. And then if some of them come back and they're interested, then the research is done on those. I mean, that certainly makes sense. Do you want to table this item until our March meeting, and that we'll try to get a better list or an additional list of properties from our designation report and maybe talk to some other people?
And then who's going to obtain that list?
Well, I'll look at the designation report. You know, in fact, I almost did that before this meeting to get the properties. The other properties...
You still have to do research, right, for the 50 years.
I think some people have done research, because I remember the graduate student that helped us with the designation report, he didn't have to go downtown. I remember he got the information online. He did have to look at every property, but he did it online. I'm pretty sure he didn't have to go downtown and flip through the hard copies and stuff like that.
Do the tax records identify the date of the structures? Does anybody know?
Honestly, I'm not sure.
That might just be something to look at.
You know, what I might try to do is just drive around and look at any properties that look old. And then based upon that, see if I can find some dates associated with it and give me and my daughter something to do is drive around town, you know, and come back with a list based upon our designation report and maybe a little bit of research on my part, and we can add it to the WW2 barracks list here, and that would be our list then, if that's okay.
That sounds so great.
Okay.
Before we end the discussion, another idea could be to actually change the letter so that it goes out to everybody and start it out in the first paragraph with an if. If your property is older than 50, you may qualify for it.
I don't know.
And that takes away some of the personalization.
Yeah,
this is for you, but
So, well, let's see how it works.
A lot of wasted postage too.
Yeah, driving around and you miss a few people.
Well, it's pretty. Curie Beach isn't that large, and you know any of the older properties are going to be somewhat in the same area. You know,
it's all in the historic district.
Right. You know, I'm not going to have to look at Curie Beach Village, for example, for historic properties. Although some are getting pretty old now. So anyway, I would make a motion that we table this until our March meeting, since it looks like we are going to have a regular March meeting now, if that's okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Next item is the mock quasi-judicial COA hearing. Mr. Eldridge.
So I'm frustrated at having to wait a month, but there's nothing else to do. You can take one. We're good to go. Everything has been prepared and distributed as needed.
Can you see us?
Yes, I can.
All right. Just to let you know, I got all dressed up in my most judicial-looking outfit for this tonight.
Yes.
With pocket watch and everything, so... Okay. Well, I'm sorry you got exposed.
If you do it, you're
going to
get a run for your money.
Okay, yeah, looking forward. All right, so anyway, I suggested, and Jim, you might be interested in this, I was doing a little bit of research in preparation for tonight, and I found what I consider to be a very good 8-minute video put together by the city attorney for the city of Raleigh on quasi-judicial on quasi-judicial meetings. That I thought was well done, and it added a few things that I thought about slightly differently. So if it's okay with the board, maybe we can just watch that 8-minute video if we can find it.
I'm looking for it now.
It's a City of Raleigh quasi-judicial, and he calls it, I think, evidentiary hearing.
Here confronting what is going to be, quote, thrown, end quote, at you.
Okay. I think that's it. If you go down, you should see a video, I think, hopefully. Yeah, there it is.
Is this the one?
That's it, yeah. So if we can kind of blow that up, fill the thing, and get the volume up.
This is as it should be. This was involved in building a great city and will continue to build an even
maybe a little bit higher volume
as we force through the 21st century.
I like this space.
Recently, the city council members and city staff have heard numerous questions and frustrations expressed because the state laws governing public participation are so different for public hearings and regular city council meetings from those for evidentiary hearings. One, the regular legislative matters, the city council considers, welcomes, even invites citizen participation. The other, the evidentiary hearing forbids the presentation of anything except admissible evidence, some of which can only be presented by expert witnesses. North Carolina General Statutes, Chapter 168-93, requires evidentiary hearings. It applies to the Raleigh City Council, the Raleigh Planning Commission, the Raleigh Historic Development Commission, and the Raleigh Board of Adjustment. The city is presenting this video to explain the law regulating evidentiary hearings in North Carolina. I hope you will find it useful. We are in the council chamber of the Upchurch Government Center on Market Street in downtown Raleigh, where Raleigh City Council holds its meetings. Most of what the council does here is in a legislative capacity as it goes about the business of governing North Carolina's capital city. In legislative matters, the city council invites the feedback of as many constituents as wish to express their concerns or even their opinions. This information is invaluable in helping council members decide on matters. The city council often holds public hearings during its meetings to solicit comments from the public about a legislative issue. These public hearings are part of the legislative process and therefore have informal rules regarding how the hearing is conducted, how long each member of the public may speak, and even what issues the public may address. These are the rules governing public hearings. The state law governing evidentiary hearings are quite different. Whatever the city council or the three other city-appointed boards apply predetermined discretionary standards an ordinance to a particular proposal, they are required by state law to conduct an evidentiary hearing. Evidentiary hearings are designed to ensure that discretionary standards are applied fairly to every applicant. I understand these people have some questions about the evidentiary hearing laws and process. Who wants to ask the first question?
So could you tell me again, what is the purpose of an evidentiary hearing?
The only purpose of an evidentiary hearing is to introduce evidence as to whether a plan meets specific standards. No other information can be presented. No opinions unless an expert witness is called to offer or dispute a fact. No inadmissible hearsay, no information on any related issue can be considered by the city council.
You mentioned predetermined discretionary standards. What does that mean?
It means standards that approve a special use permit, some site plan approvals, and variance requests.
Why can't the city decide if a matter fits in the regular legislative and public hearing process rather than go the evidentiary hearing route?
The city has no choice. State law, unfortunately, requires the city follow the evidentiary hearing process in these cases.
So how do I know if a proposed project near my property is heading to an evidentiary hearing before it's all settled and done?
The city sends out notices to all nearby property owners via first-class mail, and a sign, similar to this, is posted on the property in question.
Okay, I get my notice of the hearing, but that just makes me want more information about the proposed project.
The letter you receive will include a phone number and an email address for a city staff member that you should contact for complete information on the proposed project.
I have learned all about the project, and I don't like it. What are my options?
Well, remember, unlike in legislative matters before the city council, your likes and dislikes are not admissible at the hearing.
How about sharing my dislikes personally with the council members?
Again, unfortunately, any contact with the council members on an evidentiary hearing matter is forbidden by state law.
Okay, I've vetted the proposal, and I do not believe that the standards are fully met, and I want to testify. What do I do?
You come to the hearing, and when the presiding officer asks those wishing to testify to come forward, you do so. Testify, you will be sworn or affirmed just as in a court of law. Remember, qualified experts in a particular discipline may testify as to their opinion. Lay people cannot. Remember, if you're testifying as an expert witness or as a lay witness, you may be cross-examined as in a court of law. State law specifies that a lay witness cannot testify that the use of the property would affect the value of other property or increased vehicle traffic would pose a danger to public safety.
Mr. McCormick, so if I'm not a so-called expert, then I need to go in with my neighbors and hire an attorney or an expert to testify, right?
That is certainly an option. The city staff cannot offer advice on this question in any specific circumstance.
So tell me, when and how is the matter settled?
The city council members will come to a final decision based on the evidence offered at the hearing, just as in a court proceeding.
Would you please give us the complete list of the proposals that require evidentiary hearings in Raleigh?
Yes. All variances to the zoning ordinance and all special use permits for such things as a daycare center in a residential area or a limited home business. These would be acted upon by the Board of Adjustment. All certificates of appropriateness for major work in a Raleigh historic landmark or a building in a Raleigh historic district. These are acted upon by the Historic Development Commission. All special use permits issued by the City Council for such things as telecommunications towers in a residential area or an outdoor theater or stadium. And all development plan appeals of an action from the Planning Commission. City Council acts upon all of these.
I've heard some people say that the city's new unified development ordinance will reduce the need for evidentiary hearings. Why would that be?
The new unified development ordinance incorporates more objective standards to be applied by city staff. The subjectivity of standards reduces the instances when the city council or a board can make a discretionary decision. I hope you have found this exchange on evidentiary hearing law in North Carolina helpful. If you would like more information, visit the city's website at www.raec.gov and type evidentiary hearing in the search box.
No, I thought it was a pretty succinct, yeah. It did raise two issues that perhaps Jim can answer here. One I notice is that they post a sign on the property. I don't remember that is in our...
So we
do have it posting a sign?
I remember reading
something
to that
effect. I don't have the location memorized, but if you go to 12.06.050, I want to say D, but anyway, there's a heading that's called notice.
Okay.
12.06.050 lays out the requirements for quasi-judicial or, as that attorney was mentioning, evidentiary hearings. And right here, and it's set up like a menu with subsections by capital letters. Right up near the top of those subsections is a provision called notice. And The what's set forth in that provision is straight out of the 160D rewrite, and that's what's required. Mandy can probably get 12.06.050 notice up on the screen if you want to pursue it further, but what's in there is what we do for quasi-judicial hearing. I just don't remember posting, which is what that's called.
John's nodding his head that we have to...
Here.
It is? Okay, all right.
The town shall also prominently post a notice of the hearing on the site that is subject to the hearing.
Right. That's out of 12.06.050?
Yes, that's the one that was sent out with the email for the...
I guess I noticed a notice to me is like a little piece of paper that might be posted on a window.
There is the requirement for mailed notice.
Yes, I know that, yes. Right. The only other issue that I have is that, you know, that they obviously post the sign so neighbors can see it and know what's going on versus maybe just a notice on the door or something like that. So anyway, I mean, it's not that critical. I just wondered about that.
As Joe pointed out,
I didn't notice that.
Well, he said similar to this.
Similar, okay. I did have one. I did have one question, which I'm still confused in terms of having read, and that's the ability of a layperson to speak, not to testify. I understand that they can't testify or offer opinions that an expert would require. But at one point, the attorney said that a layperson couldn't talk, basically, and then at another point, he said that a layperson could talk and be sworn in.
Here's what it comes down to. And forget that video for a minute. When it comes to quasi-judicial hearings, here's what you need to know about the ability to testify. First of all, anything that anybody says in the course of a quasi-judicial hearing has to be in the form of sworn testimony, period. Number two, and these are a little bit out of order, they're as I think of them. Number two, a layperson by statute is incompetent to provide testimony on traffic safety issues and their value of their real estate, which are normally the two things that opponents to a red button issue about, and invariably they show up without an attorney or an expert witness. The subset of that requirement is you have to, given an ethical ruling by the state bar, an applicant or an opponent has to be very careful how they present that testimony from an expert, because that has been lately construed as the practice of law, which requires an attorney to do that as opposed to a lay person. A lot of times, and I've seen it plenty of times here, not in Curry Beach, but in the state of North Carolina, somebody, a developer might hire an engineer or an architect, and they come in and present the case on behalf of the opponent, and sometimes utilize expert witnesses doing that. That's the unauthorized practice of law. They can't do that. That has to be done by an attorney. But getting back to your question, the next thing I would say about testifying witnesses is as follows. Certainly the applicant, let's back up. Normally, when a quasi-judicial hearing is open, the first thing that happens is that a staff member, which would probably be John in our instance, gives a summary of the application. Unlike most situations, there won't be a recommendation because that's up to you all as the decision makers, but it would include the application, it may include pictures of the surrounding properties since the test is to be consistent with the look and feel of the neighborhood. It may include some other information as well. And that is usually presented by a staff member who would be under oath, since that's going into the record, and that summary, including copies of the notices and certifications of when the notices were provided and when the notice was posted, all that ought to go in through staff under sworn testimony and labeled as an exhibit admitted to the record. Then the applicant speaks, and likewise, anything they say is under oath, and any exhibit they refer to, if they want to be part of the record, has to be admitted to the record through the clerk. At that point, when the applicant is done, and what you will get in the mock hearing, and what you'll get in any evidentiary hearing, is what's called an order of business. And I've got that for you in our situation. But the next order of business on that recipe card is to announce that any parties in opposition to to what's proposed by the applicant should come forward and present their case. That's the other special damages, but those are the main two things. That is a very difficult, the concept of special damages is a very difficult concept for lay people, which you all are, to understand. It's also very difficult for attorneys to understand. It took me literally years to understand what special damages are. So, the dilemma that you've got is, number one, you want to give people who have standing, you have to give people who have standing and are opposed to the project an opportunity to be heard and to present evidence. That's the due process requirements that is incumbent upon you. But at the same time, you don't want to be in the position of determining whether they actually have standing by ascertaining whether they indeed have suffered or will suffer special damages. That's what you, in a perfect world, that's what you would be doing, but you really don't have the competence or the experience to do that. So normally, what normally happens is that I'll filter this down in a minute. But what normally happens is that you allow people claiming to have standing or claiming that they'll suffer special damages to present their case and maybe even tender exhibits with the understanding that if the matter, the matter is always subject to judicial review, the question of standing can be resolved by the court. That's not necessarily an optimum approach, but it might be the lesser of two evils, because if that person did indeed have standing, and you and the commission, or actually it's the chair, if the chair determines on his own that there wasn't any standing, and you don't give that person who actually does have standing an opportunity to be heard, you've created a lot of hot water for the town.
Jim, if I can interrupt.
Normally you would let that person speak. On the other hand, if the person or persons that want to speak are nothing more or less than the kind of comments you get in a public hearing, you have the authority not to accept that testimony. And you know, it'd be going something like this. If somebody gets up and starts the usual song and dance, but doesn't seem to be approaching it in a quasi-judicial manner. And again, at any time that anybody's testifying, members of the board and the chair in particular can ask questions. So if you get somebody up there who doesn't understand standing, but thinks they have the ability, the right to speak, you see through that and understand that they're simply commenting as they would at a public hearing and probably don't have standing, then you might want to ask a few questions to establish what you understand accurately is going on, and then tell that person that they're not allowed to testify in this situation because they don't have standing. But if it's a closer call, even if you think that they're going to fall short, you may want to allow that person to testify to be on the safe side rather than foreclosing them under a due process opportunity. One other comment. There may be times that that an applicant or an opponent is rightfully testifying and wants to tender an exhibit for the record that is totally incompetent. Let's say that somebody is opposed to a proposal and offers a affidavit that is not regarding traffic safety, that's not from a traffic engineer. Well, we know by statute that that's totally incompetent, and while you may let that person testify, it is within your authority to not allow that document to come into evidence because it's incompetent. So okay. Those are the kind of considerations you go through regarding people testifying and the evidence they present. One other thing, and I've meant to respond to this, Craig, since you mentioned it probably two meetings
All right, you know, to bring it kind of to the COA, you know, when if this is a special use permit process or a subdivision process or something like that, I can see people getting concerned about traffic and value. But this is an evidentiary, what we're going to be involved in is an evidentiary hearing regarding design standards.
So our special use permit is evidentiary, but yes.
Yes, right, I know, but typically what you're going to get is lay people or surrounding people concerned about the two things that they can't testify on as lay people. But you're not going to get that probably in a COA. Or if you are going to get somebody who is concerned about a building or a development or something like that in the COA, what they're going to want to do is talk about whether, and we got all sorts of words like consistence and harmonious and things like that. So they may, as a lay person, testify that the color of white that wants to be used is not really harmonious. Since that is not one of the two areas that they're prohibited from testifying on, would we, I assume we would have to allow that then.
Let me refine your remarks, if I may, so that I end up agreeing with you. Some preliminary points. Number one, every North Carolina, like every state, has a evidence code. We have a civil procedure, the rules of civil procedure, we have the rules of evidence. One of the major rules of evidence is that a layperson can present opinion testimony. In other words, they can offer a lay opinion if it is relevant and material to the subject matter. So you can get opinions from lay people under the right circumstances, and they don't have to be tendered by an expert. Point one. Point two, the rules of evidence do not formally in quasi-judicial hearings. They may be used as a guide, but we're not going to pull them out and use them to determine issues. So number three, I believe you're absolutely right, and it's something that I was considering when I was putting together the mock hearing. The test is whether the proposed change to the exterior features is consistent and harmonious with the exterior features throughout the district. That is discretionary, for sure. You have to ask yourself, I do believe a layperson has the opportunity to express an opinion on that key issue. Now, the real point, though, is what evidence they are able to produce to support their opinion. It's one thing to say, oh, I don't think it's consistent, but they're not offering, if that's all that they do, they have not offered any competent material, substantial evidence to prove that point. So a smart layperson is going to come up with something. I don't know what that something would be. We'll see some of it, for example, in the Bach hearing. And you will probably end up allowing that to come in. For example, maybe a layperson doesn't think it's consistent, and they're able to find some article, some periodical, or even some scholarly article that supports their view. The smart opponent in that situation would produce a copy of that article as evidence. And that's fine. We'll let it in, and it is relevant, because at the end of the day, if someone presents evidence and the other party doesn't, well, then you know how you're going to rule. If both sides present fairly credible evidence, then it's up to the commission to weigh the credibility of that evidence. So if you've got I'm not going to speculate on an example, but that's what you would be doing. So I agree with you. A layperson, I think, in COA matters, can present opinions as long as they're not deemed incompetent by statute. And the question is, what evidence do they have to support those opinions? And at the end of the day, that evidence will probably come in, and you'll weigh the credibility of that evidence versus, say, for example, the application.
Okay, well, thank you. Does anybody else have a question? All right. Well, thank you. We are at the end of our meeting. Is there a motion to adjourn the...
I have a question before you do that. You mentioned, and I was multitasking down here, properties from the Federal Hawaiian Historic Society. Where are we getting those?
Well, I could be mistaken, but I thought somewhere along the line somebody said that the Federal Point Historic Preservation Society was going to, maybe when she was here, she said they've identified all these properties on Pleasure Island.
Okay.
And for some reason, I thought that they were going to send that to us.
Okay.
I could be wrong. I'll contact them because I've kind of taken over the responsibility of trying to find that.
And Craig, before you go, was there a motion to table the mock hearing?
No, I was going to suggest that right now, yeah.
So,
okay. Is there a motion to table the mock quasi-judicial hearing? And we should add another item now because we weren't going to have a regularly scheduled meeting in March, but now we have to have it for the mock hearing. So let's go ahead and table. I'll make a motion to table the mock quasi-judicial COA hearing until our next meeting.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
And then technically we should probably schedule a regular HPC meeting for March.
Well, the question there is, I believe, Mandy can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we have a regular schedule. Do we not anymore?
Well, no, we kind of eliminated that last meeting, I thought.
That's tricky because...
Should we just do a special?
We said, last meeting we said we thought we were going to finish up all the business...
And we were going to do
and
it
then
this
at this meeting, we were going to then...
Okay, so it's still on the calendar.
So it's still
on the calendar.
Ongoing.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Here's my comment. As a public body, you have to post a schedule of regular meetings. I don't know how we do it in BOA, and I can't say I know how we do it in other jurisdictions I'm involved with. But certainly, they're like BOA.
That's correct.
So that's what you'd want to do rather than not have a regular schedule when the statute requires. You'll just adopt your schedule and cancel the meeting when there's no business.
Okay. So anyway, given that we have a regularly scheduled meeting for March anyway, so we'll table this until our March thing. Okay. Is there a motion to adjourn? I could swear I did. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn me.
Second?
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Does anybody need a break? All right. Thank you. Does anybody need a break before we go into planning and zoning?